In this review, I will be introducing someone that I think is going to continue growing as an important figure in our circles. His name is Christopher Robertson, and this book is his first release. The name of the book is In Defense of Hatred. Without a doubt, the book already makes a very natural fit on a bookshelf, right next to something like Greg Johnson's Confessions of a Reluctant Hater. It's extremely relevant for anyone who ever reads or writes anything at a place like Countercurrents, and it addresses a theme that absolutely anyone who dares talk about any of these subjects will be addressing eventually. Robertson is an excellent writer. What I mean by that specifically is that he's extremely effective at getting a point across. Printed off of my computer, the book came out to 70 single-faced pages. I kept highlighting different passages, trying to find representative pieces to quote for my review. But by the end of it, I found I had quite literally highlighted almost the entire book. And the different arguments flow so naturally into each other to create a unified whole that it would almost feel awkward to quote one of them without including all of the surrounding pieces, which would inevitably end up stretching out to include the whole book. In this way, the book almost reads more like the manuscript of a passion speech than it does like a written work. The book is clear, to the point, and strongly informed by a reading in classical, thus implicitly white, history and literature. In Defense of Hatred, quotes Kipling, references the story of Vlad Dracula III's invasion of Turkey in the 15th century, along with several other historical invasions and rebellions, includes allusions to Aesop's fables and Shakespeare, and discusses the Iliad at length after naming it his favorite work of fiction of all time. The only real criticism I can possibly even make of the composition of the book as a piece of writing is that I wish he had expanded on many of the arguments further. There's so much fertile ground for deeper exploration here that any given subsection could have easily been transformed into a whole chapter all in its own right, and it still would have kept my attention. But that's as much a testament to the efficacy of the writing that is here as it is a critique. It essentially amounts to, I want more of this. My favorite part of the book comes just a short way in. Rather than just making logical or historically informed arguments, while those are great, the book takes a relatively brief but highly interesting way through a phenomenological analysis of the nature of what we call hatred. The Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy defines phenomenology as the study of structures of consciousness as experienced from the first point of view. So Robertson brings us into our own life experiences and takes us through an analysis of what's actually happening when we encounter these different emotions. The lessons from this section, because they really came from my own introspective analysis of myself and not solely from Robertson's argumentation, have stuck with me more than any other part of the book. To summarize those lessons in a simplified form, anger is what we feel when we are appealing an injustice to someone who shares our basic standards, and we know that we can trust that our appeal will be treated with value. Hatred is what that emotion becomes when the same kind of injustice occurs and we don't trust that anyone we could appeal to in order to rectify that injustice will care, will share our standards of justice. The implication of that lesson for us is very clear. What defines us haters from everyone else is not that we've come with some moral defect that just causes us to ooze poison from our hearts for no reason. We became hateful because what started out as justice seeking eventually met with the realization that we cannot rely on appeal to any common principles in our collective society to rectify the injustices that we see. The righteous and justified energy of anger, which trusts that there can be a peaceful path to resolution through appeal to principles, was therefore left with no other option but to revert back into hatred. My first concern with the content of the argumentation of the book was this. Aren't our enemies also hateful? Were a social justice warrior personality type to read this book, wouldn't he only find himself emboldened in his own hatred of us as well, since the book places so much focus on justifying the value of hatred generally? The answer to that, of course, is yes, but even getting him to acknowledge this would place the argument in much different terms. Rather than singling some people out arbitrarily as haters and shuffling everyone else's hatred under the rug, we could eventually come to admit that all of us hate, and we just hate different things because we love different things. And then we could perhaps move ever so slightly towards actually debating those choices about what we love, which our hate flows from, more openly and honestly? Will these presuppositions to ever be set in place in this book achieve the influence that it sets out to achieve? We could focus on discussing why we love what we love, and the reasons why we hate what we hate would simply flow naturally from there. But hatred is, of course, today seen fundamentally as a white disease, especially a white man's disease. The kinds of hatred to be concerned about are sexism and racism, and these things are defined as hatred of people who aren't white men. All of this calls to mind a point I made in an argument I released just after the inauguration of Donald Trump, explaining that so-called fake hate crimes, where non-whites, gays, and others have staged hate crimes against themselves that never happened, aren't just fake hate crimes. They really are real hate crimes against whites, because the underlying purpose is to send the message that it's okay to hate whites and men back because they are the ones who are really hateful first. So in that article, I discussed the story of a black woman in Louisiana who set herself on fire with her own lighter and then claimed she was attacked by the KKK, the story of the owner of a gay bar in Chicago who admitted to torching his own establishment and writing anti-gay slurs on his own walls, and more. Of course, these, quote, fake hate crimes will never be counted as hate crimes against whites or men. When four blacks broadcast a savage beating of a white teenager with special needs live on Facebook, they were charged with hate crimes, but they were charged with hatred against people with special needs, not whites, even though they were screaming, fuck Donald Trump and fuck white people, right there on the live video broadcast, and the otherwise said nothing about his mental capacity. Yet, even despite the skewed way these statistics are collected, white people commit less hate crimes than their numbers would predict, while non-whites commit more. The official statistics show whites committing only 52% of all hate crimes at 77% of the population, with blacks committing 24% of all hate crimes at 13% of the population. And if you aren't familiar with the way these statistics are collected, that claim that whites are 77% of the population is using a definition of white that includes Hispanics. In any case, if the book were to embolden a social justice warrior to explicitly embrace his own hatred, I'd say it achieved something pretty worthwhile. After spending the first 50 or so pages defending hatred, the final 20 or so are spent balancing that defense with some advice of caution. In brief, the advice amounts to encouraging all haters to make sure that their hatred doesn't outlive the purpose which fuels it. And I'll end with this quote. There is a time to love and a time to hate. Just as the opposite of love is not hatred, but indifference, the opposite of hatred is also indifference, both being facets of caring. We should not love blindly, nor should we hate blindly. As the old saying goes, guard your heart above all else, because everything else comes from that. Do not let it be cut out, nor let it run wildly, and the appropriate seasons to love and to hate will become even more clear.